everybody. Welcome in. It's Farmcast for the Community. I'm your host, Dr. Tim Brown. We're going to do a big talk today on skin care, trying to keep skin cancer away, and how to keep you healthy. But before I get to that, I want to let you know that I actually have decided to take a break for July and August. I am just going to breathe for a moment. We will have somebody on in June talking about men's health. It's going to be a topic centered around what men should be doing for preventive health and what goes along with that. But that also goes well with our topic today because skincare is universal. It doesn't really matter what happens in your world or how you identify. The point of it is our skin is our biggest organ and we have to protect it. I have Dr. Adeboye, who's with me again this year. She was on last year talking about sunscreens, and I asked her if she would come back to us again and talk to us a little bit more about sunscreens, what we're doing well in terms of sunscreens, and maybe what some of us forget to do on a routine basis, including myself, throwing no one under the bus. Dr. Adeboye, it's so good to see you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me, Dr. Brown.
Now, you told me before we came on here, you just got married recently in the past year, correct?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, you know, I definitely wasn't a bridezilla, but it was no easy feat, but it's really an exciting and new journey to have with my husband. So I'm happy to be able to have found my partner and my partner in crime now.
That is awesome. Congratulations. And I want to say thanks again for making time for us today. I don't think a lot of people remember or even realize that pharmacists work in all sorts of healthcare environments. And I really wanted you to come on board because you work within a dermatology position, right? Can you explain a little bit about what your role is and what you do within your practice with your colleagues?
Yeah, so I am a clinical pharmacy specialist here at our Emory Dermatology Clinic. It is definitely a very unique setting, but it adds to my love for AmCare and also just overall skin health. Emory, as we all know here in Georgia, is a leading teaching hospital. And definitely the same applies to our pharmacy department. We are definitely innovative when it comes to new roles in pharmacy. I feel like our ambulatory care team has definitely grown over the past year with not only dermatology, but also rheumatology, GI, pulmonary, cardiology. So dermatology is definitely a new setting for pharmacists. I'm happy to be a part of it. As far as like the patients and who I care for, majority of my patients do have what's known as inflammatory skin conditions. So this includes plaque psoriasis, atopic dermatitis or eczema, and even what's more less common is hidradenitis suppurativa.
Well, that's a big two word there.
Yeah, and it's a tongue twister. So
it
HS,
is.
We usually just say HS. HS is definitely easier to say.
Exactly.
These patients are actually prescribed what's known as specialty medications. So definitely high cost medications. If you're looking at your formulary with your pharmacy benefit plans, these medications are usually what's known as tier 4 medications and are very expensive. You often see them advertised on TV, known as Humira, Cosentyx, also Tremfya, just to say a few. They treat all of these complex chronic skin conditions and definitely require a great degree of patient education. So definitely a big role for pharmacists.
Yeah, so you play a significant role in what we'll call high-end medications for those people who have autoimmune diseases. And I know there are people out there going, yep, I know exactly what she's talking about. I also want to go back and say, you graduated with your doctorate in pharmacy from Emory as well. And even though we're UGA College of Pharmacy, here we are collaborating, because I know you also take our students on rotation from University of Georgia, as well as Emory students and other folks. And so you open up your practice to students from all over Georgia, as well as other states, I'm assuming, because there cannot be a lot of positions like yours abundant in Georgia. I think what you do is incredibly unique, but at the same point in time, a lovely addition, as you point out, having a pharmacist there to help people decide how to find a medication for these conditions that cause a lot of problems and damage to the skin.
Yeah, no, definitely. And just to give a quick kudos to UGA, I did just recently have a wonderful P4 or fourth year pharmacy student on rotation with me.
Nice.
And she's actually going into specialty pharmacy as well and pursuing a residency. So I feel like it's a really great opportunity for pharmacy students and as well as honestly, our provider team to kind of see what pharmacists can provide when it comes to education, counseling, of course, being the drug expert or medication expert. And not only with specialty medications, of course, when it comes to specialty medications that applies not only to autoimmune inflammatory skin conditions, but then also for patients with early stage skin cancer. So I do get looped in or involved, although this is not predominantly a heavily oncology and dermatology clinic, but I do get involved in patients' care who do have early stage skin cancers, such as basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma.
You know, before, that's the whole reason I want to do this podcast again this year is because skin cancers continue to be diagnosed at an alarmingly high rate. And one of the things that we tend to forget, because I do this, I wake up, it's a gorgeous sunny day, and I think, oh my gosh, it's a great day outside, it's sunny, I'm going to work in the yard, I'm going to ride with my top down, I'm going to go biking, I'm going to go hiking. You know, it's so lovely to live where we do because we have so many days of sunshine. But I have to ask, you know, because of me being blonde, redhead, light-eyed, I feel like I burn more easily. So I'm more aware of this. Would you say that no matter what your skin tone, you still have to protect yourself from the sun so these cancers don't happen? Is there a difference between someone having really great skin that tans or gets dark pretty easily and folks like me that kind of burn pretty easily? How do we talk about that with different folks?
Yeah, so definitely any type of mole, mark, or rash, it's all fair game in dermatology, and it's all things that we want to discuss, whether it be related to a rash, to eczema, or a mole that we're concerned for skin cancer. So when it comes to skin cancer and suspicion for skin cancer, it applies to everyone. So not just someone who's fair skinned, but someone who's maybe darker skinned like myself. So as patients get involved or seek care with a dermatologist, I always say it's very important to make sure that we're pursuing skin cancer screening techniques. And so even if you don't have a family history or maybe have an individual risk for skin cancer, I always say just establish that relationship with your provider so they too can determine what those risks are. The risks include being fair skin, blue eyes, red hair, maybe skin that burns easily, or maybe you had heavy sun exposure early on and maybe had a lot of sunburns, you know, when you're even less than 18 years of age, and even have a history of like those heavy blistering sunburns. And then additionally, of course, the family history. So definitely if you have any of those risk factors, please seek the care of a dermatologist. It's not just about, you know, of course, looking cute and maybe making sure our skin is clear, but of course, making sure we understand our risk for skin cancer.
You know, you mentioned, and I want to go, so even no one should be exempt from seeing their provider and getting their skin looked at, or a dermatologist, somebody who works in dermatology at least once a year, right? For an over the body kind of scan. Is that fair that, you know, I know it sounds kind of crazy. Somebody's just going to look you over like left and right, but they're looking for those weird marks you were talking about, correct?
Right. So I always say, you know, when you're establishing care with a dermatologist, try and seek someone that maybe you feel comfortable with. So if it's whether a male patient seeking out a male dermatologist or a female patient seeking out a female dermatologist. Because when it does come to a full skin exam, they are looking for not only those obvious places, but some of those harder to reach and less visible spots. I can, you know, there's countless times where I've had patients have different moles or marks when it comes to the scalp or some of those private regions, of course. And you want to feel comfortable with a dermatologist looking at those areas.
Your back or the back of your legs. I mean, it's hard to see like all of it. I mean, if you're looking in the mirror, it's even hard to see. As I mentioned, I'm fair skinned. So having my shirt off, the fact of the matter is I can't see my lower back to do a self skin exam. So I tend to go every year because I'm afraid I'm going to miss something.
Right. So I definitely agree. The American Cancer Society and also the Skin Cancer Foundation suggest also to seek an annual skin exam every year. But in addition to that, I know you mentioned like the back and some of those harder to reach areas.
Yeah.
Try and also do your own monthly skin screening. So what that looks like is basically you can make sure you're in a well-lit area, so not in a dark room. Also being in front of a full-length mirror and also using a handheld mirror. So not even just, you know, checking out what we look like on a day-to-day, but also moving that mirror around, trying to see if are there any spots behind my ear, in the back of my neck, any of those hard to reach areas. And we also have a way to look for those spots.
I never thought about behind my ear. You've taught me something new. I mean, I've tried my best to look at, but behind my ear, you know, I think one of the things, obviously being fair skin, I can see when something changes pretty easily, like the darkened area, darkened mole, those kinds. But what if you're someone who's darker in color or even someone who's black? How do you sort of keep track? Is it hard to see spots like that? Or for me, you know, as you talk about being well lit, I think about some of my friends and the fact that if they have a rash, it's harder for me to see a rash on their skin than it is mine. Mm-hmm. How do you teach folks that have different color skins to sort of know their differences and how to look for those odd things that may happen?
Yeah. So what we call is the ABCDEs for suspected moles and spots.
Okay.
So are those spots, are they asymmetrical? Are the borders uneven? Have the colors starting to darken or look more black? Have they gotten bigger in size? At least, you know, just around less than half an inch? Are they changing in size, shape, and color? So with dermatology, it's such a visual specialty. I always encourage patients, maybe just taking a picture or have someone take a picture of that. So you can be able to see what that change looks like. And again, making sure you're doing those self-examinations on a monthly basis, especially if, you know, it's something that you are concerned about. So you're able to go to your dermatologist, flip through your phone, and able to show them how it's changed over time.
Technology
is wonderful.
I love that. I like that a lot. The other thing that you know, has come up recently in discussion is if you have a spot that looks like a sore and it scabs over and it bleeds but never heals, that's not your immune system. That could actually be something that's wrong with your skin. Like you talk about, like it could be psoriasis, eczema, or even a type of skin cancer, correct? So we shouldn't just ignore that.
Exactly. And sometimes it's easy to ignore, you know, it fell off, so it must be fine.
Right.
But even if it's something where you're just scheduling that appointment, it may not be an urgent appointment, but taking a picture, showing your dermatologist how it may be changed in anticipation of that appointment, it definitely helps substantially.
So I had a friend who's a dermatologist, he calls it skin mapping. And he says, you know, look for the little dots here or there, and the ones that look weird, make sure you pay attention to them. I love your idea of taking a picture or even a video of kind of the area that looks odd and then going back and revisiting it. I never thought about using technology like that before, but even if you're the partner or spouse of someone, you might do it for your spouse and save that video because, again, I don't know how you are, but I'm not real good about looking in the mirror and examining every part of me without judging myself. So it'd be nice to have someone who just sort of is there for the, let's just see if something looks odd in terms of moles and stuff. So I like that idea a lot. That's really smart.
Yeah, I definitely feel that it definitely helps a lot. And it's part of like our check-in procedure. Any thing that's questionable, you're not sure about, it really does help to upload those photos into your chart, sending a communication message with those photos, which of course are secure, but it helps the dermatologist have some guidance to determine what's urgent, maybe not so urgent, and maybe an agent that can just be prescribed in the meantime.
That's a great idea. I think the other thing, you know, sometimes with dermatology, people are like, well, I don't want to go to a specialist. even if it looks weird, mention it to your primary care provider so they can put eyes on it as well. And then they will tell you what looks kind of scary and what looks to be okay. I found that working in primary care for the years I did, that somebody would come in and go, "What is this rash?" And you're like, "I have no idea. All rashes look the same."
Yes.
See what's going on. But a dermatologist may see something that those in primary care don't see. So I love that concept of making sure you show folks along the way. So you don't have to wait for that annual skin check with your dermatologist. We've mentioned cancer several times. In skin cancer, I don't want to make it so simple, but I'm going to. There's a good cancer and a bad cancer. And I know cancer is really good, but You know what I'm saying? Can you talk about the types of skin cancer? Because I think people just sort of group them all together and go, "Oh, it was skin cancer." But that's not true. It's not one big category. There are some subtleties in this.
Right. No, there are some subtleties and there are some differences. And like we kind of were alluding to in the importance of this discussion today, skin cancer is actually the most common form of cancer in the United States. So there's millions of patients that are affected by skin cancer, but it is divided into various groups. Basal cell carcinoma and squamous cell carcinoma, those are all cancers or skin cancers that we call non-melanoma skin cancers. And they're very easily treated if they're detected early. So definitely the importance of screening and doing those annual exams and monthly self-checkups. When it comes to what's more severe or scarier would be melanoma. That's the most serious form of skin cancer. And that affects about 1% of all patients with skin cancer. But like I said, it is unfortunately the most deadly. So again, going back to the reason why we need to perform those annual checks.
Can you tell, as we talk about squamous cell and basal, those are cancers that if you catch them early, basically they just cut them off the skin. There's not a lot of drugs you have to do. It's not a procedure that everybody goes, "Oh yay, I want to do that," but it's pretty straightforward. If you see a weird mole or something that doesn't look right, can you tell if it's basal or squamous versus melanoma? I mean, is there a difference in the way it presents on the body?
Yeah, so this basal cell and squamous cell carcinomas are definitely more localized. They're easier to treat, whether it be using just definitely excising or removing them off or freezing them off, cutting them off, or prescribing a certain cream or topical to treat them. However, when it comes to melanoma, that's typically when the cancer has unfortunately started to spread. So it did originate as probably like a small or a basal cell or squamous cell, but then it has unfortunately begun to spread. And we all know once the cancer has spread, it's definitely harder to treat. And usually the survival rate is not the best. So again, just another reason why, even though we all love being in the sun, myself included, always making sure to keep up with those annual skin checks, because if it's something that we can avoid and easily, like you said, cut it off, why not?
Right. Well, I think a lot of people go, "Oh, it looks weird," but they say this one's not really a problem. But your point is, if it doesn't get looked at when it's a basal or a squamous, it could progress and become something else. It's not like... Yeah, I think a lot of people just sort of go, "Oh, those aren't important. That cancer's not going to kill me. I'll get to it when I get to it." And it sounds like maybe we should put more emphasis on let's get to it sooner rather than later. Yeah. I think you bring up a really good point about being safe that's out there. And, melanoma being I hate to use the word good and bad cancer. Let's just say melanoma is the cancer where people don't survive as easily if there's a higher rate of having some complications and problems. But no matter which one we talk about, it all comes from us being exposed to the sun, right? Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, I lived in Ohio for 26 years. We had the sun probably 3 days out of 365. So it really wasn't as apparent that we were getting all this incredible sunlight hitting us all the time. Now we were, but it just didn't fit. Since I've been moving here, I wake up every day and I'm just amazed at how gorgeous it is on the majority of days. But I also have realized that I have more color than I've ever had in my life because the sun seems, I don't know, hotter here or more direct. What should I do just daily to protect myself? Are there things that I should be aware of? What am I doing wrong, basically, Dr. Adeboye?
Well, you know, I'm always nice. So I won't say you're doing anything wrong necessarily, but there's things that you could probably do better. So as far as like daily tips when it comes to protecting yourself from the sun, of course, what dermatologists and what we always recommend first is to is avoidance. So trying to make sure that you're not being out in the sun too much. Of course, necessarily, is that an easy feat? No, it is May. We are all out into the sun. But the next step then is sun protective clothing. And that often includes wearing a wide brim hat, wearing those cute sunglasses, possibly long sleeves. There's even companies that actually make sun protective clothing by using ultraviolet protective factor or UPF, definitely more expensive.
I've seen those.
Yes, very expensive. Looser fitting clothes, darker, brighter colors. And then also, like I said, avoidance. So avoiding the hours of the day between 10 a.m. and also 4 p.m. when the sun is at its peak. But of course, we can't always do that, right?
Right.
So the next step then is, of course, to use daily use of sunscreen. So daily use, not just, you know, when we're out going to the pool or going on a hike, but daily use.
All right, I'm going to get to that in a second. So I think you just said something that's really important that clicked with me. Don't do what I need to do outside between 10 and 4. If I'm going to mow my lawn, do it later in the day. No, I don't want to say do it early in the morning because I'll wake my neighbors up and they won't be happy with me. But if I want to work in the garden or I want to go for a hike, or if I do them sort of outside those hours, the sun's not as intense. But the second part of that, and this is something I'm learning as well, it's just hot. It like July, it's just hot. Putting a long sleeve shirt on right now just makes me think, oh Lord, no. So if I don't cover myself up, I should be using sunscreen and all those parts that are there. I read an article recently that I shouldn't get dressed and put on sunscreen. I should put on sunscreen before I get dressed because you never know what I've left uncovered. Like, you know, did I cover the area or not? But is that what you recommend as well with sunscreen?
Yeah, no, definitely. So of course, a lot of us dress in layers.
Yeah.
You know, look at me, I have my white coat on and have a dress under. But, you know, at some point you might remove your coat, your clothes might shift, you might roll up your sleeves. That's and so you don't want those areas left untouched.
Got it.
So what we always recommend first, so you're getting ready, getting out the shower, going about your day, what you want to then include is sunscreen use before putting on your clothes and making sure that you're using the adequate amount of sunscreen.
So how much? So I have to admit to you, I just throw a big glob of lotion on and, you know, I don't really measure. How much do you normally have to make sure you have adequate coverage? And we'll get to the numbers in a second, because I know that's important. But like, how much should one use to make sure you've covered your body in sunscreen before you get dressed?
Yeah. So just to make it easy, if we think what we have in our kitchen, think about like maybe a shot glass or something that's at least 1 ounce. So thinking about a 1 ounce shot glass, filling that up with, you know, sunscreen, and that amount is actually the amount that's required for your entire body. So I know some of us don't necessarily like putting on so much lotion and things, but it really is required, that amount, to really protect yourself from the sun.
Yeah, to me, that sounds like such a small amount compared to what I put on. You know, again, when you're fair skin, you tend to make sure that you're covered because being burnt is not a pleasant thing. Yeah. The other thing that I think is important to talk about is I forget behind my ear, the top of my, I forget those things. I'm getting better about the back of my neck. The other thing that I forget is my feet. Yes. Like if I'm wearing flip-flops or slides or things like that, I don't know, do people still wear flip-flops? When you're wearing slides, those things, you should be doing like your feet as well and the tops of your hands. I think folks forget to do stuff like that.
Yeah, so definitely thinking about like the amount of the areas that you would just in general apply lotion. So when you're applying lotion, you apply it to every and all parts of your body, both the face and also the body. So thinking and remembering that, okay, you know, behind my ears, the back of, you know, the over my hands, and also the back of my knees, those are all hard to reach areas. Yeah. And areas that we tend to see actually some of those early stage skin cancers, because like you said, they're hard to remember. Yeah. But this is why we're here, you know, definitely talking about it and having that discussion.
Yeah, I have to admit, I'm better when I'm on vacation or I'm going skiing or I'm going to go for a hike. I kind of focus, go, okay, I'm going to be outdoors for a couple hours. I don't think about this as much when I'm getting ready daily or if I'm going to do lawn work, for example, because I know, you know, like, I'm not dressed up. I'm not thinking about it. It's not an activity that I'm planning. It's just a chore that I have to do. One of the things that I think confuses me, or and it still does, I walk down this big, long aisle at any given store, and there's just sunscreen products galore. I mean, insane amount of sunscreens. There are some that are for daily use, right? It's not like, I know there's some that are very specific about, you know, going to the beach or hiking, but there are just skin products in the skincare aisle that have sunscreen in them, correct?
Yes. And I feel like, you know, the skincare industry has really exploded when it comes to the amount of products that are marketed to us. So definitely, like you said, it can be confusing to figure out which ones to pick when we are going down our skincare aisle. So, but all sunscreens are definitely not created equal. You want to have somewhat of a checklist in your mind when you are shopping. Okay. I'm always good with a checklist that usually helps me get things done.
Me too.
Yeah, definitely.
Me too.
And so what we want to look for, you know, are those key terms that you'll see on the labeling. So you'll probably see the first thing that you'll see is UVA and also UVB. Those are basically the two ultraviolet rays that we want to prevent or block when it comes to the sun. Okay. And so with UVA, that's the most predominant ray when it comes to sun exposure, and UVB, it's the most one that is attributed to like our melanomas. Again, like the more serious and severe form of skin cancer. So looking for something that says that is first broad spectrum.
So if it has broad spectrum on it, it's supposed to block both of those rays, A and B, right? So I need broad spectrum to get a full complement for my skin. Good. Okay, what else?
And then first you'll see the broad spectrum, make sure it blocks UVA and UVB. Then you'll see some numbers there. And we want to be able to make sure we know what those numbers mean. You'll see a term that says SPF or sun protection factor. That's broken down into different categories. You'll see categories when it comes to low sun SPF, so 6 to 10. Then you'll see medium, 15 to 25. And then you'll see high, 30 to 50. And then you'll see very high, greater than 50, and at most 100. And as far as the American Academy of Dermatology, what we recommend is that we want daily use of a sunscreen with at least SPF 30.
Okay, so on my bottle, I should be looking for broad spectrum. And if I'm using on my, I should have one for my face and one for my body, right? I mean, I know we guys like to have everything in one bottle, my conditioner, my shampoo, but it really, truthfully, you need a face lotion and a body lotion. They should be broad spectrum and an SPF of at least 30. Is that true for all skin tones and colors? Or can I get away with less than that if I'm someone who doesn't burn easily?
Yes. So it actually is true for all skin tones and colors. It must include an SPF of at least 30 and also broad spectrum.
So what does that 30 mean? Like, it seems so nebulous. Like, what is 15 and 30 and 45 and 100 just sounds like I'm going to be pale as a ghost. Why even walk outside in the sun kind of thing? How do these numbers work? What does it mean?
Definitely. So like, again, we're probably like, you know, where are these numbers coming from? Are we just slapping on a 30 or are we slapping on 100? So SPF 30 actually means that when we apply a sunscreen of at least SPF 30, it will take you 30 times longer to burn than actually if you had no sunscreen, right?
Okay. So does that mean if I've slept on 100, it's 100 times greater? So that sounds like it's even like triple, right? The 30 is that's not how it works though, is it?
Yeah. So it would make sense that you actually, maybe I should put on SPF 100. So it's 100 times greater than when I would have sunscreen, no sunscreen at all. But actually it is further broken down again. So SPF 30 blocks out at least 97% of the sun's rays.
Okay.
And then as we increase it, an SPF of 50 blocks out then 98%. And then an SPF of 100 blocks out 99%. And there's actually no sunscreen available that can filter out 100%. So you see, there's really no difference between SPF 30.
So don't spend the extra $50 for a sunscreen of 100 when sunscreen SPF 30 broad spectrum is going to get the job done.
Exactly. So if you see that big price jump from SPF 30 to SPF 100, don't spend that extra money. Make sure that it's at least SPF 30 and broad spectrum.
I think to me, I learned a long time ago that I was doing 15 for a long time and I moved up to 30 when I moved here. And I've been doing the 30 pretty, and I found a lot of products, to your point. It was overwhelming. I went searching for one and there are a lot of brand name products. And then there's some generic versions that are made by the stores. You know, I think you look at CVS, Walmart, Walgreens, they have their own generics. I have found the generics to be as good as the brand, but sometimes I don't like the consistency or smell. So people just kind of have to experiment. But man, I will tell you, I spent probably 30 minutes in that aisle trying to figure out what to buy. And then secondly, when I look at the price tag, I'm like, $24. Surely there's something that's not $24. So I think, you know, this can be really pricey if people don't shop around.
No, definitely it gets very expensive. And like you said, there's so many different forms, whether it be sprays, gels, or lotions. But it's just so important just having that education and knowing what's actually going to provide the most protection for you.
That's a good point. You bring up sprays. I have to tell you a story. I was at the beach last year and we were by the pool and I watched a mother come out and she had three kids and they were running everywhere because they were so excited, right? It was the pool. They were gonna have a great time. She grabbed one by the arm and she pulled out that can of spray. And she was spraying for all there was to spray. But as I sat there watching, I realized that half of what she was spraying was disappearing into the wind. When should we put on sunscreen? So number one, the spray sticks. Mm-hmm. And number two, is spray as good as lotion? And you know, I worry a bit about the fact that mine doesn't last all day. Like, how do I know that? What do I do?
Yeah. So, you know, there's just so many on the market. And the sprays are definitely a convenient option. I mean, who doesn't want to just easily, you know,
spray their kid down.
Yes. And you're good to go. And I can only imagine having three kids and trying to make sure they're all staying very well protected.
Exactly.
But the thing is, when you actually go back to when we mentioned about an ounce of sunscreen, you know, it's really hard to determine if we're actually using an ounce of sunscreen and when we're using a spray. So even though we're spraying ourselves down, we may not actually be getting the recommended amount of sunscreen being applied. You make a good point. When we put the sunscreen on, is it one and done? Not quite. So we do have to reapply it. And it is recommended to reapply at least every 2 hours.
Okay. So does it take, does it take a little while for the sunscreen to start doing its job? Like if I go sit by the pool, pull my beach bag out and I choose not to spray myself. I'm going to do the lotion because I think I can get more on. Does it start working immediately blocking those rays? That just sounds like a lot to ask for something that I immediately put on and it starts to work. Or is there a lag time?
Yeah, no, it definitely takes some time. I'm pretty sure we all wish that we can just rub it on and we're good to go, especially with all of our day-to-days just getting so busy.
Yeah.
But it does need to bind to the skin. So we want to allow that absorption to occur. And that does take at least 30 minutes.
Oh.
So thinking about how, you know, we all are in the kitchen, how we always want our food to be nice and tasty. We need time for that food to marinate. So we definitely want the time for our sunscreen to bind to our skin, quote unquote, marinate. So it is working to its best ability.
So apply before I go out, give myself 30 minutes. If I spray, make sure I spray in a ventilated area, but doesn't have wind blowing the spray around everywhere. And I read, and I'm laughing at your marinade, but with spray, you should put on two coats is what my dad would say. We're going to spray two coats on, right?
If only, yes. Well, probably way more than two coats. You'll be there for a while to get to 1 ounce.
Yeah. See, that's, I don't think people realize the sprays are so convenient, but you may save more time just doing the lotion and being done with it. Although, to be fair to parents, I watched this poor parent wrangle those three kids and try to get spray on them versus lotion. I'm not so sure their day would have been gone by the time she got lotion on all three of them. So 30 minutes, broad spectrum, looking for SPF of at least 30. We have to reapply every 2 hours. But that does lead to the question about swimming in the pool, like these kids. So they get there at 10 a.m. We lather them up. We let them run free. Mm-hmm. And you talked about reapplying. Do I pull them back out at 2 hours to do that, even if they're swimming? What do I do if they're doing stuff like that?
Yeah. So just like how we wanted the time for our sunscreen to marinate or bind to the skin.
Yeah.
You know, once we get exposed to water, guess what happens? Some of that sunscreen does come off.
Okay.
And so that traditional time of reapplying every 2 hours is unfortunately decreased. And so at that point, you want to look for sunscreen that says things like water resistant. And so that would give us more instruction as far as when to reapply, because you actually have to reapply if you've been exposed to water or have been out sweating for 40 minutes. And then if it says very water resistant, then that time can be extended to 80 minutes.
80 minutes. Okay. So hold on. So I need broad spectrum, SPF of 30 at least. I need to make sure I give myself 30 minutes before I go out. And now if I'm going to be active or in the water, I should be looking for the very water resistant on the packaging just to give myself the most time without having to slather back up again.
Exactly.
You stop and think about that. I have to admit, I don't think I routinely stop when I'm doing chores outside or I'm on vacation to reapply my sunscreen. I don't think I watch the clock close enough to know 40 minutes and 80 minutes. Certainly not when I'm hiking and sweating. I don't think about that. That's a big ask for folks to remember that. Is it okay if they just reapply to the exposed areas? So in other words, not all over their body, they could just put it back on their arms or the top of their head and their ears if they're hiking, for example. Is that fair for reapplying?
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair game. And definitely making sure it's part of like your checklist when you are going outside and hiking.
Point.
So naturally, like how we want to make sure we are not outside and getting thirsty or we're making sure we have our water bottle, go ahead and grab your sunscreen as well. So even if you're not quite sure, you can't really remember when you last reapplied, you can just go ahead and slather some on when you do remember.
That's a good point. I'm laughing at myself. About two weekends ago, I was working on my patio, getting everything ready for the spring. And I have to admit, 4 o'clock rolled around and I realized I'd been going since 10 a.m. and not once that I had stopped to reapply. And I realized that, yes, I was a little toasty from the sun that day. It's just, you get so caught up in your work that I love your idea of every time I stop to get a sip of water or get a new water bottle, I should have thought about reapplying my sunscreen. It's a trigger that I should now start thinking about. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I think I read somewhere where the best habits are ones that you can surround with another activity.
Yeah.
So I love and encourage for patients to, if you are, like you said, getting a sip of water, maybe have that sunscreen around the corner or an easy distance, just to give you that signal to be like, hey, did I apply? Did I not apply?
No, I think that's really smart. Even if I'm wearing clothing and a hat and everything else, that gives me a moment to breathe from whatever I've been doing. And then secondly, it puts it with something I need to do anyway, which is hydrate myself, you know, drinking water and such. But I'll tell you one of my other bad habits. It's really horrible. I buy sunscreen and I put them aside and I have them and I just use them until the bottle is empty. I don't really think about how long I've had them. Do these things stop working after a period of time? Do I need to worry about an expiration date on sunscreen?
Yes. So there is an expiration date. You know, the makeup does start to break down. And we always say from the time that you actually purchase the sunscreen, okay, it has an expiration of 3 years. So even if it's something where you just mark on the bottle that you purchased, getting that Sharpie out and actually writing 3 years to the date, I actually do this.
You're better than me. I've never thought about this. Okay. All right. Good.
And just to give you that signal, because I can't tell you how many sunscreen bottles I've purchased, and I have them in all different areas of the house.
Me too.
You know, in our kind of mudroom area, in the bedroom area, in the bathroom area. So it can, you can kind of forget when you actually bought them and when they actually do expire. So honestly, if you're not sure at all, please discard them. And then when you do purchase a new bottle, it does expire within the next 3 years.
3 years. Yeah, because I have what I call my vacation pack that I sort of keep with my luggage. So when I'm traveling, and I have to admit, there are bottles in there that I know I bought more than 3 years ago, because the face one, for example, I don't use enough of it to go through it quickly. And then secondly, I don't necessarily lay in the sun because of what we just talked about. It's just not something I enjoy. So I don't think about it, but I love that idea of a Sharpie on it. So I don't have to rely on my old memory to remember when I picked that up. You know, earlier I talked about kids and going through, and I really should have asked you this question then. I simply forgot. When is it safe to start putting sunscreen on little ones? I mean, as an adult, or your kids that are running around outside riding their bikes, it's kind of a no-brainer, but what about little? Do I start doing it as soon as they're born? And, you know, it's coming up here. People are going to be at picnics and graduations and Mother's Day and Father's Day and all those great things. When do you start making sure that the little ones are covered up? At what age?
Yeah. So as you know, it can, you know, it's easy to think that we want to protect our kids and want to make sure that they are not exposed to the sun and could, you know, get an awful burn. But we actually, it's recommended not to apply sunscreen until the child is at least 6 months of age.
Okay.
If younger, what we encourage and recommend is to more so either avoid or have sun protective clothing. So when it comes to looser fitting clothes, darker or brighter clothes, having your baby wear that cute wide brim hat, and even sunglasses too, those are all measures that can be used if younger than 6 months of age. But once you're 6 months, you know, feel free to definitely make sure that your child is using the appropriate sunscreen of at least SPF 30.
Okay. And can little babies use adult sunscreens? I know there's no such thing as an adult sunscreen, but I see so many products that are geared towards, you know, babies, and they're colorful and it attracts your eye. It's almost like a marketing campaign, but is it okay if I just use regular banana boat for someone who's 6 months of age?
Yeah. So as long as it's SPF 30. Now, you know, what you might then see is like, you know, the ones that say baby formulations might be at least lighter in texture when applying, and that might be easier when applying it to your child's skin. But as long as it's broad spectrum, SPF 30, and of course, all the tips that we talked about, either water resistant or very water resistant, that is what's more important, as opposed to maybe buying a more expensive, like baby formulation of sunscreen.
I think that's a good point too. Also, if you buy the baby formulation and you like it, you can use it for yourself as well. These are interchangeable. There's not an age issue. I think a lot of people get caught up in, oh, that's the baby sunscreen because it says, you know, baby fresh or something on it. I don't want people spending a lot of money, but I want them to use sunscreen. Wow, we've covered a lot. So basically, when I walk down the aisle, I need SPF of 30, broad spectrum. I'd like something that is very water resistant because I want to do 80 minutes if I'm in the water sweating. And I should make sure I cover all the areas that are exposed, but even more if I just do it before I even get dressed in the morning. And if I have a little one 6 months of age or older, I can use sunscreen on them. Otherwise, cover them up the other way. Anything else you can think of sunscreen wise that would be a tip for folks out there and folks like me who forget things? Oh yeah, throw my sunscreen away at 3 years. That's an important thing. But yeah, what else?
Well, and then I think we kind of touched on some things like even though we're not necessarily going outside, headed to the pool, just think about little things where, you know, if you're on your drive to work or you have a long commute, think about the amount of sun that you actually experience when you're actually driving down on the highway. Those are all aspects of our daily lives that necessitate use of sunscreen. So it's not just an outdoor fun summer activity, but it's a daily activity that we can kind of build in with our routine. I feel like we all have such elaborate skincare regimens. Mm. So let's make sure we add that to it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I have to admit, I do watch TikTok every now and then. And I love it when the comments like, give us the skincare routine, and the person then shows them and there's 9 products in front of them. I'm like, holy cow, I can barely get out of the house in an hour in the morning to get to work. If I added 9 products, I'd have to start getting ready the night before to get out. Yeah. So I love your idea of making something simple as a habit, such as my sunscreen and my lotion and my skincare, kind of making it one product that I like. Yeah. That way, sort of, I get a lot of stuff done with that one product. I like that. Yeah.
Exactly. If we can make it multi-use, why not?
Yeah, I agree. Are there any tips? I always ask folks that are on, you know this, I always say, listen, we're going to tie this up. Are there 3 or 4 pearls that you want to leave our listening audience with when it comes to sunscreen, skin cancer, then also keeping good care of your skin, like, you know, making sure you take care of yourself? Because again, the skin is the biggest organ we have. And I think you said this earlier, skin cancer is the number one cancer in America. So what can we leave these folks with? A bit of knowledge.
Yeah. So when we talk about clinical pearls, I think as pharmacists, we love clinical pearls, but the biggest takeaways I would love for our audience to have is that sunscreen is for everyone. So not just fair skinned, but then also a darker skinned person like myself. And then also making sure that we choose the right sunscreen. So broad spectrum and SPF 30. If you think you're going to be getting sweaty and you might get some water on your skin, making sure it's water resistant, very water resistant. And just, why are we doing this? So I know we talked about our, you know, elaborate skincare regimens, but what's probably one of the most important products of our skincare regimen is our sunscreen. And because ultimately what we want to do is reduce our risk for skin damage, even wrinkles or early aging.
True.
And also, of course, ultimately skin cancer. If we can prevent it, why not?
Yeah, I agree. And then I think, you know, just to tack one on, making sure that someone's looking at your skin every month and that a healthcare professional is looking at it at least every year.
Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, we all do this. Same with, you know, brushing our teeth and flossing. I don't know about you guys, but I try to floss, but I sometimes miss a day here and there. I would bet I miss sunscreen here or there too on days I shouldn't. So having that checkup to keep me on track is a great idea. Yeah. As always, it's so lovely to see you. You bring us such great information.
Thank you again for having me. I love when we're able to sit down and talk about sunscreen and how we can prevent skin cancer. It's my day to day, so it's nice to bring that out to our local community.
Thank you again. This is Dr. Attaboy. See, I got so caught up. Say your name for me, please.
Adironke Adeboye.
Ay, just lovely, wonderful. And works in dermatology from Emory, has been a clinical pharmacist in practice now for a couple of years, has really, really been groundbreaking in her field and working in dermatology and also promoting the profession of pharmacy. So once again, thanks for being with us. To remind our listeners out there, the month of June is Men's Health. Dr. Henry Young is going to be on board talking about men's health, preventive health, what we should be doing as gentlemen looking ahead, not only for things like prostate cancer and cardiovascular disease, but also just as we talked about, skin cancer and what we can do as in general. Until then, my name is Dr. Tim Brown. You've been listening to Pharmcast for the Community, sponsored by the University of Georgia's College of Pharmacy. Go in good health and enjoy your holidays. Thanks again. Bye-bye.